Hello and welcome to the Alcohol Alert, brought to you by the Institute of Alcohol Studies. In this month's podcast, we spoke to the Chief Executive of Alcohol Focus Scotland, Alison Douglas, about their new report, Realising Our Rights, How to Protect People from Alcohol Marketing, which is a comprehensive review of the adverse impact of alcohol marketing and presents recommendations and best practice on how countries can regulate and restrict alcohol marketing. We asked Alison why the report was developed and what it says.
The World Health Organization has identified for some time that there are three best buys for alcohol policy, and one of those is restricting alcohol marketing. So it's an area that we've been doing work on for some time, but the Scottish Government specifically asked us back in 2015 to look at the evidence base around alcohol marketing, its impact, and to make recommendations on how we should tackle it. And they were keen that that was built on the best international evidence. So we constituted this group of experts from around the world who had expertise on alcohol marketing research, on public health law and public health policy. And we published an initial report back in 2017 that kind of focused on mass media marketing and particularly the impact on children and young people. And what we were keen to do this time around was actually to do something a bit different, to take a broader scope of what constitutes marketing, because I think our understanding of that had developed, but also to look beyond children and young people, because again, the World Health Organization says that there are really three purposes to regulating alcohol marketing: to protect children and young people, to protect those who are in recovery, but also to recognize that all of us are impacted by the promotion of alcohol by companies, by brands, that is creating this kind of social norm that alcohol is part of everyday life and that it's a purely pleasurable and positive thing to drink alcohol. So we were really kind of looking at how could we understand the wider impact of alcohol marketing? What could we learn from other countries about what they've been doing? So we did commission additional research to help us with that. So we've got publishing, as well as the report of the expert network, we're publishing research, a literature review looking at the impact on people who are drinking heavily or people who are in recovery and the general population, as well as case studies of what other countries are doing.
Slightly backtracking to you talking about the first report in 2017, that focused much more on children and the impact of alcohol marketing and promotion on children. Did that lead anywhere? Did the Scottish Government take that and implement any policies based on that?
The Scottish Government responded to that report by making a commitment in their 2018 alcohol framework that they would bring forward a consultation on alcohol marketing, and that they would specifically listen to the views of children and young people when thinking about how to take work in this area forward. So we've had that commitment for some time. That commitment has been now given a timescale. The Scottish Government has committed to consulting in autumn of this year. So this report's really timely in terms of informing that process. But we were also keen, because we're kind of tapping into the hive mind, as it were, the experts around the world, that we didn't make this a report that's purely about Scotland or even the UK. We wanted to produce a report that had kind of wider use and impact. And I hope that that's what we've done with this report, that other countries can pick this up and use it as a kind of framework for how they can take forward marketing regulation in their country. Another aspect of this approach that we've taken this time around is to really try and incorporate the voices of people who are directly affected by alcohol marketing. So we've been doing some work for some time with children and young people, but also for this report, we been doing engagement with people who are in recovery. And I think it's sometimes only when we hear the voices and the experiences of children, young people, people in recovery who are on the receiving end of a lot of this marketing and are probably less accepting of it maybe than many of us who we kind of regard it as wallpaper, that they're saying how negatively it affects them. I mean, children, young people talk about how visible alcohol is in their lives, despite the fact that it's an age-restricted product, and that it makes them feel concerned about their parents and how much they might be drinking, because especially if they're seeing things that are on special offer or they're seeing something heavily marketed that they know their parent or their carer drinks, then they are concerned about the effect of that. They also demonstrate really high brand recognition. And children that participated in the Children's Parliament project, for example, were writing down brand names like Heineken or Harris Gin and drawing the bottles, getting the colours and the branding. You know, they're really very conscious. And these were kids of like 9 to 11 years old. And so it's affecting them. And then people in recovery are talking about how difficult, especially in early recovery, the fact that alcohol is constantly there and triggering them, how difficult that is for them to navigate, having to develop strategies to avoid going to shops where they know they're going to encounter alcohol. I think sometimes when we hear it through other, you know, children's eyes or through people in recovery's eyes, actually makes us stop for a minute and think, what are we doing? Why are we allowing alcohol to be so heavily promoted given the huge health and social impacts that it's having on us?
I read in your report that the network, the Alcohol Marketing Expert Network that you set up or that was set up, thinks that public policies and interventions to reduce alcohol harm should be led by public health alone. And therefore that commercial interests have no role to play in the creation of policies. And that's an explanation for why the network doesn't include alcohol industry representatives or alcohol marketing experts. On that sort of note, I think the counter argument would be that the advertising industry is huge and creates thousands of jobs, and so shouldn't the alcohol industry have a say when it's not just solely about public health, but when it's about commercial interests as well?
We've been very much guided by the World Health Organization's recommendation that public health policy should be developed free from vested interests of the alcohol industry. Our primary purpose is really looking at how we can promote the public good and how we can protect people's right to health. That doesn't mean to say that ultimately decision makers don't have to consider the economic consequences of the decisions that they make, but that when we're trying to look at this from a public health perspective, we need to ensure that the industry are not involved in that and potentially undermining it. I think it's particularly important when it comes to marketing, because some of the system failure that we've seen has really come from allowing the industry to self-regulate. And in practice, that is not protecting people from exposure to alcohol marketing, and it's not protecting them from content that is particularly appealing. I mean, even within its own terms, I think the self-regulatory system is failing, because it's clear that alcohol marketing is appealing to children. It's not solely appealing to children, and it may not actually be deliberately designed to appeal to children, but, you know, children are out there in the world. They are aspiring to, you know, becoming adults or becoming adolescents and then adults, and they're attracted to humour and to images that of people socialising and having a good time, just as the rest of us are. So, I think self-regulation clearly has failed, and we need to design a regulatory system that is based on public interest, free from commercial interest.
On the self-regulatory side of things, the code that the alcohol industry has is that up to 25% of the audience is allowed to be children, which I've always found incredibly arbitrary, and because as a percentage, that means nothing about the numbers. It could be millions of children still watching these alcohol adverts in sport or wherever else it might be. So yeah, I agree that it clearly is not working. And that really touches on one of the really interesting parts of your report about the human rights-based approach to alcohol marketing restrictions. And it seems to be sort of a relatively new space, and that people have recognized for a while in the tobacco control space. Why do you think that's only been discussed in alcohol control more recently? And can you explain the human rights-based approach to these restrictions?
It's an interesting question. I'm not really entirely sure why it hasn't been discussed more broadly. I know from our experience of, you know, working with the expert network that we've really, as a team at EFS, we've kind of gone on a learning journey. I certainly have personally, in understanding human rights. It's quite, it can be feel like quite a specialist subject, and we've been very fortunate that we've had the support and input from Professor Amandine Gard, who's leading light on public health law based at Liverpool University. And she's really helped us kind of understand this, and I think that learning has been transferred from tobacco, and I think there's also been a lot of work being done internationally around obesity, you know, with particular regard to children's rights. And it is about how we can learn from the application in other topics. But I think the fundamental point is that human rights are not optional. They, you know, we have these obligations as states because of the international law and conventions which countries have signed up to. So it's not just about anymore that we need to act on alcohol marketing in order to improve health and well-being, but actually people have a right to be protected, and countries have a duty to trivialise that right for their citizens. And it goes beyond the right to health, actually. I mean, when you think about how digital marketing in particular is kind of invading people's personal and social lives, it's actually about the right to privacy as well. So I think there's a lot more that we can do with the human rights based approach, not just in marketing, but in alcohol policy more generally. But it very clearly has an application when it comes to alcohol marketing. And the industry will be very quick to sort of say, well, this is a legal product, we've got the right to market it. But, you know, again, the international conventions and thinking on this is really clear that that commercial right does not trump the rights, particularly of children, but also of people more generally to be protected from that commercial exploitation. If we accept that countries have this duty to protect and promote people's right, you know, particularly the right to health, then they cannot relinquish that by passing the buck, the responsibility to the industry to regulate themselves. It really means that if we accept that human rights argument, states have to implement effective and legally binding regulation of the alcohol and advertising industries.
Yeah, and especially back to that 25% of children point, that it's just bizarre that that's accepted when that clearly doesn't protect children.
So what are we saying, that it's acceptable to have potentially hundreds of thousands of children as collateral damage in order to protect the industry's right to advertise, or, you know, the right that they would claim to advertise to adults? I mean, that just, you know, you can't make that trade-off.
And it always seems odd to me with advertising sort of more generally, that everything else that we consume, we, in terms of media, we choose to consume. Nobody forces anybody to go onto Netflix and watch a certain programme, but advertising is one of the only sources of media that is pushed in your face. And when it's something, when it's for a totally sort of innocuous product, it's, people kind of are okay with that. But the second that it starts to be an unhealthy commodity that kills thousands of people a year, I think we need to sort of remind ourselves constantly of just how bizarre the situation has become.
And people who are in recovery will talk about actively opting out of alcohol adverts but that they still end up being, you know, served. I mean, they, you know, that they've tried multiple times to stop people sending them alcohol adverts because they find them triggering, and yet they're still receiving them. And, you know, there's no escape when your phone is your means of communicating with friends and family, or keeping in touch with others in recovery, or, you know, friends.
That touches on your report again, because this newer report, which is has built a lot on the 2017 report. One of the other aspects of it is broadening it out in terms of looking at the different, or the sort of newer mediums in terms of social media, and how there are far more places that people are being served these advertisements. In terms of the key recommendations within the report, what do you recommend countries do? And are these recommendations built from sort of best practice case studies of other countries?
Yeah, the Stirling University case study research looked at a number of other countries across Europe and tried to distill the learning from those. And they interviewed a number of people in each country, trying to get a mix of governments, civil servants, and advocates. And what was really strikingly clear from that work was that the more comprehensive you can make your approach, the better. Because what happens is that the industry will try and use any means to circumvent the regulation or to challenge it in court. So the simpler and more comprehensive the restrictions, i.e. a comprehensive ban, is the ideal approach. And that makes it much easier to enforce and much easier to ensure that the regulation is effective. So that's the fundamental recommendation of the network, is to encourage states and encourage countries to take that comprehensive approach. I think if you can't take a full ban, which is clearly the preferred option, then providing a positive list approach is a really useful way to address alcohol marketing. So that what that means is that instead of saying what people can't do, what industry and marketers can't do, you say what they can do, because that kind of future-proofs the regulation. It prevents, you know, if we had gone back in a time machine, if you had designed regulation prior to digital media, you know, none of us would have anticipated that and the forms that it's taken. But if you say that any form of alcohol marketing is banned apart from, for example, company-to-company marketing, then you would effectively future-proof it against new channels that emerge. Digital marketing has really posed quite a lot of new challenges. It's a bit of a paradigm shift. So it's enabling companies to reach far more people far more cheaply, but more importantly, to target people. And there's clear evidence that it's particularly targeting heavier drinkers. And that challenge is very difficult for individual countries to address on their own. So that's why we're calling on the World Health Organization to develop an international approach to regulating digital marketing. And we think that's best done as part of a wider International Framework Convention on Alcohol Control, similar to the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control.
So what are the next steps? Your report came out 2 days ago, and the Scottish Government will be consulting on marketing restrictions, as you say, later this year. What do you hope to see from that, and what do you think is likely to come of that?
There seems to be fairly good cross-party support for action on alcohol marketing. In the previous Parliament, over half of all MSPs had signed up to our pledge to protect children from alcohol marketing. Now we need to convert that into action. I don't underestimate the scale of the reaction and the effort which the alcohol industry and the advertising industry will put into resisting regulation, but we have to ensure that the voices of those who are affected, particularly children, young people and those in recovery, are heard in that decision-making process.
That is all for this month. Thank you for listening, and we hope you can join us in next month's podcast.